And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, live from the Brooklyn Nets Hospital for Special Surgery Training Center in Red Hook, Brooklyn, where I am joined by two people. First, the reigning champion of the three-point shootout, the league leader in three-point percentage, Joe Harris. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Zach.
Doing good?
Oh, yeah.
And to provide a little happiness, a little upbeat vibe, the color analyst for Brooklyn Nets games in year two, full-time, right? Sarah Kustak, how are you?
I don't know how to say hello and tone it down. I'm thrilled to be here.
No, you can bring, you're not, see, thrilled, thrilled already. Is it? No one, you're not thrilled. You just, you need to, people who are so happy all the time, it's you lose a certain amount of credibility with your happiness, because I just don't believe that you're that excited to see anyone.
You and Joe Harris, what's better? The best three-point shooter in the league, my favorite podcast.
See, you would have to
do you feel my voice? I'm not even adding any enthusiasm to my voice.
Okay, so we're gonna have some fun, and you take over the podcast and everyone, because you're an experienced TV personality. Joe Harris, you won the three-point shootout in Charlotte, defeating both Currys, with many other Currys in attendance in the Currys' hometown. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you care that you won? Like, do you actually care?
I mean, yeah, of course I care.
Okay.
It was a pretty exciting moment. A lot of people gave me some grief because apparently I wasn't smiling enough when I did win, but
I did notice that the in arena reporter told you to smile.
Yes.
And I couldn't help but, men are not allowed to say that to women, nor should we. But I thought it's rare that I've seen the reverse situation of a woman saying, "Man, smile," and you would not do it.
I end up smiling a little bit.
Like a little. You smiled like I do when
I was still locked in, though. Yeah, I was still locked in.
This is how we see Joe.
So you're happy.
I was happy.
Were you nervous? Like for the final for the final round, were you nervous?
I was more anxious for the final round, than I was to start. Because I went first and I didn't really have time to think about, I didn't have time to just sit there and watch guys. I was just thrown right into it. Whereas the other guys, everybody's sitting around through commercial breaks. You get a little more anxious just sitting there. So I was able to go right away and just not even have time to think about it.
Did you talk to Buddy or Steph during the commercial breaks? Says, "Hey, look, 27 is a lot of points. I don't know if you guys can really get any trash talking during the commercial breaks."
No, I mean, to be honest, all the guys were awesome. We were just enjoying the experience of being there. We were, it's still a competition and you're definitely competing with guys, but overall, it's just a fun experience that people were trying to take advantage of.
See, the three-point contest has gotten too soft. We need more venom. We need someone to play Larry Bird. We need Larry Bird to come when he came in the locker room in 86 or 87, whatever it was, and said, "Everyone here is playing for second." That's, we need some, there's nobody like that. Are you even in the locker room together?
We were in the locker room together, but most of the time guys are pretty good with one another. Steph's making the rounds, saying what's up to everybody. You'd be the person that you would think would come in.
Yeah, I feel like if anyone was going to trash talk.
No, Steph is not going to trash. He's too nice. Well, who was the meanest person in the three-point shootout?
Not Buddy
Hield, not you, not either of the Currys. Who else was in it?
Dirk.
Dirk didn't talk any trash?
No, Dirk was just happy to be there. Same thing. He was just, chatting up with everybody.
Dirk had to zone in just to get through the thing in a minute. Like I told he came on my podcast. I was like, "You're going to need an extra 25 seconds, man. You're old." Dirk's old.
He asked for an extra 15 seconds.
Did they give it to him?
Nah. I was kind of hoping they would. But he ended up making it through it. No problem, though.
They should grant. I think Joe Johnson. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think Joe Johnson failed to make it through.
He didn't make it through.
Yeah.
There was someone that I almost thought wasn't going to make it through. Was someone shooting really slow?
Dirk was the one that everybody was worried about.
Was Beal in it? No.
No. Danny Green is more of a jump shooter, though, too. Me and him were a little worried that we would get slowed down because we jump, more than a lot of the other guys that were doing it.
You practiced, I think you said University of Charlotte. Right?
Yeah, I did.
So that's the rack is the thing you got to get used to, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still shooting, but the thing you have to get used to is literally just taking your eyes off the ball so you can reach down to grab off the rack.
What about practicing blindfold? Did you ever think of that? Just practicing the reach and just to make
just to
it second nature?
To it.
We need to introduce something to make this more.
How many 3-point shots do you think you can, if someone handed you the ball so you didn't
blindfolded?
Need to work? Yeah. Have you ever shot blindfolded
before? Yeah, I did it with Rob Perez. He came mm-hmm. actually to the facility, and that's what his whole thing was. He's like, I think that you could make at least like 4 out of 10 blindfolded, and I was horrible. I mean, they had me do it like 15 times, and I made it once, but yeah, not as good as what everyone would think.
Interesting.
Can I ask a question?
You can do whatever you want.
Where did you practice the night before? Charlotte University?
Yeah, UNC Charlotte.
And you said you're giving them the trophy,
that's
which you should
what I
not do.
Know. Please tell me you didn't. Yeah. I mean, all love. I'm allowing you to use your
give me the trophy over trophy, giving right? Sarah the trophy.
I should have given it to you, Sarah.
I would have. It would be live front and center.
Yeah, I did.
Love of the
I mean,
family.
The head coach at UNC Charlotte right now is Ron Sanchez, and he was an assistant at Virginia when I was there.
Okay.
So I've known him since I was a freshman in high school, and that's my guy. He let me come and practice, and then I was just kind of joking around with them that if I won, I would give them the trophy.
So you didn't actually give them the
trophy? No, they have the trophy right now. But they told me that they're not going to hang on to it forever.
It's going to get lost in the shuffle. I'm already worried. It's going to get lost.
Someone's going to put it in down to Charlotte right now.
Someone's
going to
put it
you.
In a closet. It's just, you need to stay on top of this. Are you going to, do you, they don't make you defend it, but you should defend it next year, right?
I mean, we'll see. Yeah. I would definitely like to probably go back and do it again. It was a really, really fun experience. It's obviously a lot more fun when you win, but, yeah, now that I know what it's like,
I know you were excited to do it. I almost feel like all your teammates were more excited.
Yeah, they were
excited
pretty excited. Yeah. Yeah, they, I mean, you saw like Rondé's video and a lot of the guys, they were just all, you know.
I was talking to your agent yesterday, Mark Bartlestein.
Oh, yeah.
Who said he was there.
Yeah.
And he's like, literally as Joe was shooting, he also represents Jared Dudley and Damari Carroll, that they were texting him like, emojis after every shot. They were so, it wasn't just like, hey, Joe's doing well once. It was like every single shot, like thumbs up and smiley. That's cool.
It is awesome. But that's
your teammates
like, that's
appear
like,
to like you.
I mean, that's the Brooklyn Nets though. If you come and watch us play, you see that all the time. I mean, the appreciation we have for one another is real genuine and authentic. And to be honest, I actually have Jared Dudley probably to thank for getting me into the 3-point contest.
Did he really make a call to Adam Silver?
He did.
That's not a real thing.
I swear to God.
With Jared Dudley, I would believe
they
it.
You can't put it past Jared Dudley. He's the most well-connected man in the NBA.
So, I believe that he made the call to Adam Silver. I don't believe that the phone call had influence over Adam Silver.
Don't tell Jared that.
Well, you had a vacation. You were going to go on vacation, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I told you last night, like literally a week before or 2 weeks before the break that I was planning on going down to Miami just to hang out, get a little sunshine.
Kyrie and Kevin crashed their dinner.
I probably would have crashed
their alleged dinner. But you had to, so I think that the thinking was if Clay gets into the game, he's going to do the 3-point contest,
yeah.
And if he doesn't get into the game, he's just not going to go. And so he got into the game. So when he gets in, you think, well, that's it. That's
yeah, I
it
thought
for
I
me.
Was going on vacation, and then he decided he didn't want to shoot in it, so opened up a slot for me.
How'd your girlfriend deal with the lack of Miami?
Thankfully, she's pretty easygoing, so she was excited, you know, regardless, and she was happy to go to Charlotte. A little bit different, you know, rainy Charlotte versus Miami, but it was fun.
First All-Star I've ever missed, and I did not miss it. Strangely enough, I did not miss it. I like All-Star. I'm not one of so many of the people around the NBA are like, oh, All-Star, another All-Star. Parties.
You're a celebrity there.
Party. No.
You're a celebrity
there,
actually, like you're a celebrity
actual,
Summer League.
There are, no. Summer League is for nerds. All-Star is like, there are real famous people at All-Star. Like actual movie stars and music stars. Who performed at All-Star?
I have no idea, to be honest.
Okay. That's a good answer. Who was the most famous person that texted you after you won the 3-point shootout? Any players who like you didn't even know they had your number?
No, I mean pretty much all the guys that I already know fairly well. That was about it. Nobody really, you know, any big surprises. I mean, my teammates would probably be the most famous guys that texted me, to be honest.
So I guess D'Angelo Russell might be the answer to that.
That would be the answer.
Okay. Well, congratulations. I still feel like we need a little. Maybe Clay can bring back some venom because I remember. I believe he won in Toronto.
Yeah.
So that's 2016, I guess. And the people with the Warriors were like, Clay really wants to win. Like, this is not a joke to him.
Yeah.
Steph has won before. Clay is going to do this until he wins. And he was super – he won, and he was, like, really, really excited. Like, that's what we need We need people who really want to win.
Yeah.
And is he a trash talker, though? Do you need a good three-point shooter? Can you just, like, toss Embiid in it?
You could. Are you saying Joel Embiid's a bad three-point shooter?
No, I'm just saying.
You cannot toss Russell Westbrook into it this year. No. That's hazardous to the spectators around the perimeter of the.
Oh, my God.
It would add venom. It would add competitiveness.
It would. It would. Embiid would be fun. I wanted Brook Lopez to make it. Even his percentage is only, I think he's like 37, so it's not, but I just think it's fun.
I would love that. I don't think that would add to the venom.
No.
I think it would add to the happiness.
Guy in the world.
I just like when a giant person suddenly strolls into the 3-point shootout. Here's this, he's 7'2" or whatever he is, and he's huge,
yeah.
And all of a sudden he's bombing threes. I think that's fun.
I would always support Brook Lopez being in.
Oh, 100%.
Swamp Dragons.
We should have had a t-shirt for you.
People. One of the most important things we do for our health every day, twice a day hopefully, is brushing your teeth. And most of us don't do it properly. That's why That's why we need to buy Quip. Quip is a better electric toothbrush created by dentists and designers, so it looks cool. It was designed to make brushing your teeth more simple, affordable, and even, dare I say, enjoyable. A built-in 2-minute timer pulses every 30 seconds to remind you to switch sides so you're not over-brushing the right side and not the left side. Up to 90% of us, apparently, don't brush for a full 2 minutes. 2 minutes is a long time. If you actually sat and counted 2 minutes, it's a long time. Or don't clean our evenly, side by side. Brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. 3 out of 4 people use bristles that are old, worn out, and ineffective. 3 out of 4, that's too many people. A lot of people. Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association, which seems important, and has thousands of verified 5-star reviews. That's why I love Quip and why they're backed by over 20,000 dental professionals. And best of all, Quip starts at just $25. I assumed a high-end electric toothbrush would cost way more than that. If you go to getquip.com/low, my last name, you get your first refill pack for free with the purchase of a Quip electric toothbrush. That's getquip.com/low, getquip.com/low. So you mentioned this before about how the nature of the Nets is you've gotten this, the character has obviously been, you know, every franchise says we want good character guys. The Nets have actually done that. You know, they've made an effort to build a culture. And you mentioned one of the things that I think is a hallmark of that is people who take joy in the success of their teammates, even when maybe they're on the bench and they're not contributing as much as they would like. That is hard to find in life. Forget basketball. That's hard to find in media. It's hard to find in any industry. People are naturally sort of envious of other people's success. So that seems genuine. Like that, how is that just a reflection of the people and the coaches? Like how has that been cultivated here?
Well, I think you see it really from the top down. I think you could go to every fraction of the organization and you would have very similar-minded people, real unselfish, high character, genuine, just kind people that care about one another. And that's from the front office to the coaching staff to the performance staff to equipment guys, ball boys, everywhere, and the teammates, and there's just no bad people in the organization at all. I think a lot of us come in to work every day, and we all are happy to be here. We just enjoy being around one another,
which is
pretty unique.
But and that's the amazing part. When you look at this group, and I do think it started a couple of years ago when Sean Marks came in and Kenny Atkinson and just buying into the fact about it being something bigger than just yourself. But to me, this offseason was the difference maker in that everyone took a leap. Everyone. Like, you look at yourself. You look at D'Angelo Russell, Spencer Dinwiddie. Everyone needed to take a jump in order for this team to take a leap. And we always, around the league, everyone talked about you guys playing hard and playing smart and doing the little things. But to me, it's the time and effort that everyone spent here in Brooklyn all summer that got you guys there.
No, definitely. I think, you know, you see a lot of different NBA teams where guys, you know, are just kind of doing their own stuff for a lot of the summer. And here, obviously, we have the luxury of being in New York. So it's a place that people, you know, want to spend time in the off season for sure. But we had everybody in here all off season long, even guys that were pending free agency, whatever it might have been. People were around working out with one another. And I think a lot of that just goes back to what I was just saying, just the fact that we actually enjoy just being around each other.
So people, teams talk that, right? Like joy and other people's success. You hear that. Like that's a talking point for teams. Like we want that to be a hallmark of our team. And players talk that. But like as a human being, that isn't always easy.
Yeah.
And on this team, it did not have to be easy at all. You have two young point guards, one of whom has had to come off the bench. And you know, you have – and then you had – we'll talk about Karis later more, but Karis ascends as maybe the best all-around player on the team. Then he gets hurt, and in his absence, D'Angelo Russell becomes an all-star, mm-hmm. and now Karis is coming back. You can even take someone like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who has been a starter, is coming up for a new deal this summer, is not a starter anymore, and Kenny is experimenting with Kuroots at the four and Trayvon Graham at the four. Like, they're a very natural sort of rivalries – that not rivalries, but you know what I mean, like yeah. playing time battles. You know, there it would be very human for that to have a game, even for you, for anybody to have a game where, man, I'm on the bench, I've only played 12 minutes tonight, the guy, my backup is killing it. Like, it would be very human to have a moment of not taking joy.
Yeah.
Is it hard to maintain that mindset all the time?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're all humans at the end of the day. So you have, you know, your ego involved, you're competitive, you want to play, whatever it might be. But I think, Kenny and, you know, Sean, but the coaching staff primarily, they do a good job of just having sort of a level of transparency with the guys in the team. So like, you know, in the years past, like if there were games where maybe I wasn't going to be playing a ton or not play at all, you know, Kenny is going to take me aside and talk to me about it beforehand. And he's going to tell you to, you know, stay ready. He's like, you don't know when your opportunity might come. It could be, you know, game 5. It could be game 20. I don't know. But you have to stay ready and stay locked in. And it's not going to do you a service or the team a service to, you know, mope or, you know, be not supportive of any of the guys that are out there. You just have to, in your mind, stay ready and have that sort of level of professionalism. And I think you see that just with everybody, but it's because of the communication and the level of transparency that we have with the coaches and the coaching staff.
I just think too, like, competitiveness doesn't always breed chemistry, and the chemistry on this group is off the charts. But I feel like you're one of these people. Like, there's a lot of you that were just on this team and trying to make it in the league.
Yeah.
It wasn't just about the Brooklyn Nets. It wasn't just about trying to get this organization to another level. It was about you actually trying to stay in the league. And
yeah.
I think you look, I mean, you can go down the roster of all these guys. And to me, that's what's so special, because you found a lot of success in one another. And it almost mm-hmm. has felt like you guys collectively needed one another to get to your best.
Yeah. I mean, you have a lot of guys that are in similar sort of situations. You know, you go back to the similar mindset, but when you're all kind of fighting for the same thing, it's at least just in my experience, it's easier to kind of rally together, you know? And I think you've seen that with a lot of us that are here, because we all kind of, whether it was Karis falling in the draft a little bit, Jared Allen falling in the draft a little bit, guys getting traded or cut or waived or whatever it might have been, you know, we all are kind of a band of misfits, I guess, a little bit, like cast off sort of guys that have found a second opportunity here and been able to kind of rally around that.
How much do you think do you guys on the road go to dinners together all the time?
Yeah.
You guys do so much, and that's what's jumped out to me most mm-hmm. about this team and about this the machination of this team the last few years, is that you guys are together a lot.
Yeah.
And obviously working out here, but just on the road. To see.
Yeah, we hang out quite a bit outside of just coming into practice every day. And I mean, again, it's just, you know, I hate to keep repeating it, but we do just like being around each other, and we enjoy each other's company. And I think we have a good mix of younger guys and veteran players. And our veteran guys are really good about, you know, having these experiences in the league and understanding this, the value and like the camaraderie and the chemistry. Like Jared Dudley is constantly, you know, organizing stuff and dinners and just little hangouts. And same thing with Damari or Ed Davis.
I thought you were going to say yeah. Jared's constantly talking.
Oh, that too. You know, between him and Damari, I mean, you're not going to be able to get a word in. So
does Damari, Damari is, under the radar fashion. he doesn't get the attention for it that like Russ does, or
yeah.
I mean, Kelly Oubre has even gotten more attention for his attention to detail. Does Damari talk trash about people who don't dress as well as he does? Do people make fun of Damari for, like, dude, like, why do your pants end, like, halfway between your knee and your foot?
He makes fun of me. He evaluates what I wear, both on whether it's on the plane, whether it's what I wear for games, makes fun of me if he doesn't like it. And at first I thought it was all in good fun, and then I realized it's serious.
At the end of every day, he's
letting me know if he likes it, doesn't like it, you should wear it again, you should not wear it again, you should burn it.
He takes his fashion seriously.
No joke.
See, I want to make fun of him, but I
you can't.
I guess if you can pull it off, you can pull it off.
Like,
I wore the outfits that if I were just walking around Long Island City, Queens, like going to the grocery store, dressed like that, people would assume a mental patient had, like, escaped from a nearby facility. Like, I'd say, but it's, he pulls it off.
He does. That's just his, you know, sort of swagger.
Listeners, you know that getting tickets to sporting events for friends and visitors used to stress me out. There were too many sites to check on the secondary market. Am I getting a good deal? Am I getting the best deal I can get? What if there's a better seat and I just forgot? Well, guess what? SeatGeek has solved all of those problems for you. It pulls millions of tickets into one place. Only have to visit SeatGeek and that's it. And you can easily find the best seat you want for the price you're willing to pay. They have a super easy to use color-coded system. Green dots for good deals, red dots for less good deals. It's very interactive and easy to see where your seat is, whether it's obstructed, unobstructed, all of that. And best of all, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. SeatGeek should be your go-to ticket source for everything: sports, concerts, Broadway shows, theater, comedy, all of it. Best of all, my listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app. Enter promo code LOW, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. That's promo code LOW. Bam, $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event, and we have the tickets.
So, yeah. Okay, so I do think it's interesting that, and this happens with teams all the time, injuries are such a wild card. So Karis suffers this traumatic injury and is out for months. And in the interim, D'Angelo Russell goes crazy and becomes an all-star. So now Karis is back. He's in the starting lineup. He's clearly trying to find himself. But as a team, do you guys discuss or feel – and you're not one of the lead ball handlers on a team. You handle it, but that's not going to be your job.
Yeah.
Karis has that job and D'Angelo has that job. As someone who's playing around them and just someone on the team, do you find yourself like, I wonder how that's going to sort itself out? Like, can Karis come in and still be the way he was? Is D'Angelo going to – like, do you just find yourself curious, almost like a fan?
Not so much, actually. Especially now that it's like the question is posed and thinking about it, I really hadn't thought about it a ton at all. I just kind of felt like it would – I figured it would take Karis a little bit of time just to get his rhythm back. You know, you're coming off of a significant injury, so physically – it would take time to get back to normal rhythm, but then psychologically too, you know, you're still going to be second guessing probably a lot of the movements. And, you know, with that, you just kind of anticipate, you know, taking a little bit of time. But Karis has honestly come back much quicker and better than I anticipated. And even like last night, the way that he was playing, you know, he's so athletic and shifty at getting to the rim, and he was able to, you know, just make plays getting downhill, whether he was, you know, facilitating, for the teammates or for himself. He did a little bit of everything. Then his activity defensively, like Karis doesn't necessarily have to be a primary ball handler in order to do well. And I think that's why it is easier, sort of him coming back into the fold. With D'Angelo still playing well, D'Angelo is still our primary ball handler, and Karis is really good playing off it because he does so much other things at a high level. And, you know, there are times though too where we're still going to have Karis play the one occasionally. Like last night, there was a lineup where Karis was their primary ball handler, and he was running point for us. And Kenny does a good job of just kind of like sort of slowly easing guys it back into how it kind of was beforehand and getting them more comfortable, trying to get them a little bit more confidence. Like, I think we were up like 20 last night, and, you know, he wanted Karis to really handle the ball a lot more and just have him, you know, kind of get his confidence back and just become more accustomed to how we were playing before he got hurt.
So this season has been, you guys are now two games over 500, I think, solidly six in the East. You lost either seven or eight in a row, and dropped at one point to 8 in 18. I think 8 in a row.
Yeah.
Sarah's correcting me. Silently. You're on the podcast. No, just say 8. You don't have to mouth 8. You can just say 8.
I wanted to say
8 in a row. Well, Joe said 7 on Howard Beck's podcast, so I was listening to that on the way here. It got in
then
my head that maybe I did the math wrong.
The 8 and 7
8
is
and
7. Confusing.
I got confused.
And 8 and 18 and the gut punch at the end. So you have like 4 just kicking the you-know-what's losses in the, early in the season. New Orleans lost where you guys just threw the ball out of bounds 14 times and they came back and won. And to go to 8-18, you have the Paul George game where they rally back from 20 down. And at that point, there's still 56 games or whatever left. But at that point, it feels like 10 games under even in the East. This is not going well. And they could easily be 500, but they're not. What do you remember of the locker room after that game? Because that the season turns the very next game with a really close game win over Toronto, I believe, in overtime.
Yep.
But do you have, what happened in between those two games, or what do you remember of the post game scene of after that Oklahoma City loss?
I mean, it was a rough sight in the locker room after that game because we had, like you said, obviously there were some games we felt like we should have won. The Oklahoma City game obviously is tough. You know, you lose at the buzzer to Paul George, but two games before, same thing had happened against Philly, and Jimmy Butler had hit a game winner against us too.
Cleveland was
a game winner.
So there was
a lot of Memphis. I mean, Memphis, we were up 10, I think, with like a minute.
The Memphis game.
We were up 10, I think, with a little over a minute left in the game, and just completely meltdown. You know. Unfortunate side.
And this is,
some,
by the way, after last season when your record in close games is the worst in the league.
Yes.
Spencer's on the ground after, you know, and every not getting a foul call every game. So
it
had the vibe of like, maybe, did you ever think maybe there's just something about how we are? Like, we don't, maybe something's just not working in crunch time that we can't figure out?
I mean, I think a lot of it is just, you know, you have to, as a team, it's hard to get to the point where you have confidence that you know you're going to win at the end of games. Not to say that we thought we were going to lose, but you just like, you know, you're not sure as you should be. And I think when we started getting over that hump is when, you know, we beat Toronto, but then we had been in so many close game scenarios up until that point, especially following last year where I think there was like 26 or 27 games. We lost by like 5 points or less. And we've been in so many of those scenarios. I think all of those were just like really valuable learning experiences for us to have more comfortability playing in late game scenarios. And then you started seeing the tide kind of go in our favor where we just had a little bit of luck on our side in some of the games. And then, you know, you factor in just like D'Angelo being, you know, end of games, huge, extremely clutch. Karras has even hit a number of sort of like last 10 seconds or less.
Yeah, early
shots
in the season, he had a couple. Yeah.
And, you know, we were able to kind of hinge on those guys for a lot for sure. But I think collectively we just started having, a wave of confidence. And you saw a lot of these closer games or games where, you know, we might have been flipped last year. Flip in our favor this season.
Well, what did it do for you? So you lose those 8 straight, and it was gut punches, especially finishing with the Oklama City game.
Was the Philly game in there too?
Yes.
The Butler game.
They were
there.
It was literally like 2 games.
And it was all, the end of games.
Cleveland was a buzzer beater, Alec Burks.
Yeah. So it was brutal. And then that, prior to the Toronto game, Kenny Atkinson, the coaching staff, suggests you guys have
a players-only meeting or film session. And
day of the game?
No, so we had a day in between. And we had practice, but the coaches just felt it would be best if the players, we just watched it ourselves and kind of hashed it out amongst each other. Because there was a lot of frustration, obviously, at the end of the game against Oklahoma City. You know, guys were really getting on one another. You know, it's easier when you lose to point fingers and, you know, this and that. And coaches thought it would be best if we just, you know, it was just us. And honestly, Jared, Dudley, and Damari, the guys I've been talking about, Ed, the veteran guys in our locker room were really the ones that kind of took over the film session, and Jared especially. And it was extremely valuable because what he was saying, even though a lot of like the clips are not necessarily anything to do with him or his minutes are not like ton at that point in time, but he's like the loudest voice and everything he's saying is accurate. So nobody can really argue with him with what he was saying and his knowledge and everything that he brought to it. It just kind of put a healthy perspective, I guess, on, you know, guys knowing and understanding how they should play versus like what they personally thought. You know, I've been on teams in the past where, you know, you have a real prominent player, like for example in Cleveland, like LeBron was pretty good about, you know, letting guys or talking about what he felt like their roles should be on the team. And, you know, obviously you're going to listen to what the best player is going to say. And it's amazing to see that the same thing happened though too with someone like Jared. Mm-hmm. You know, Jared is a voice like that for us in our locker room. And he really kind of laid it out for us after that OKC game. And then I think, you know, after that, that's, you know, when we had, you know, obviously our win streak, yeah. But a lot of it was just guys starting to understanding like how we were supposed to play in order for us to have success.
So this is a dumb question, but the players only film session, I assume the coaches have chosen the film clips and just hand.
No, like, so we just watched the entire game.
Really?
Yeah. We watched the entire game and we had our head video coordinator, Trevor Hendry, was in there with us. And so he was kind of manning the clips, and guys would just stop, like if there was something that happened and they had an opinion on whatever was going on, they would just say, tell them to stop it, run it back, and then we would just kind of discuss it, and we did that throughout the entire game.
Wow.
Yeah.
It could be a long film session.
It took a long time, yeah. Yeah.
Did that game end with like a miscommunication on a switch and PG gets open? Was that game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I assume that was discussed. That seems like maybe that was discussed in the locker room.
It was discussed. Yeah. I mean, there were definitely some things end of game against OKC where we didn't do a good job, just simple execution, whether it was that switch or there was a shot, I think that D'Lo had taken where there was, a lot of time still on the clock. We could have ran. Yeah. So it was like simple stuff like that, but that wasn't, you know, there were so many other things that happened over the course of the game. We literally had a complete meltdown. We were up 20 in control of most of the game. So there was a lot of other things that were discussed besides, you know, the stuff at the end of game. Yeah.
So then you lose the OKC game. So what's the locker room like after the Toronto game? Is it calm or do people verbalize like, hey, maybe we've turned a page. We finally won a close game.
Yeah. I mean, you're thinking, hey, you know, this is like a shot of confidence because we just beat the best team in the East. I forgot what their record was at that time, but they were first in the East very solidly too, I think. And they had a completely healthy roster. And we just felt, you know, we felt, hey, we beat them at full strength in a real competitive game, where we were able to actually execute down the stretch and finish it out. You know, again, it didn't all hinge on the end of game, but we just did a much better job executing down the stretch, made the right plays, got the stops when we needed to, got the 50-50 balls and just played smarter basketball. And we just had a lot more confidence in ourselves after that.
Let's get to very important matters, like your beard.
Most important matter.
Because it's getting a little unkempt. Unkempt, however you say that word.
Really?
It's getting a little, so it has inspired the nickname Lumber Joe, which I don't like. I feel like we can do better than that.
Do you want to go through the whole list?
The list was not great. I've been told by Sarah that RJ is trying to start Beef Jerky Joe.
Yeah.
Which that's a no. That's a hard no.
There was also like Sloppy Joe. And
homeless
that one show. I was not
no, that's, no, was, no, no, that's
I just
a no.
I don't know why we can't do, who, when did someone start calling you Joey Buckets?
People started calling me that when I was in college.
That's good. That's like better than all the other ones.
I think just hold on to that and ride that out.
Yeah.
Joseph G. Buckets.
Oh, no, that's the one Bird likes best. Joey Buckets.
That's too close to like Chuck E. Cheese. Joey Buckets. Joey Buckets is better than the other ones.
It is better than the other ones.
I can't believe that your girlfriend tolerates the beard. I just can't believe that it's a thing.
She's not a fan.
She's not a fan?
No.
Did she ever try to nix it before the season started?
Yeah,
before
she
you
definitely
even...
did.
Did
yeah.
she
when
ever
did
try
this
to
start?
Sneak you sleeping pills so that she can shave it off when you're not even awake?
Yeah, well, to her, you know, disappointment, I was able to just kind of keep it around because she actually is living in London right now, so she only comes to New York occasionally. And, you know, it started
for her job,
sheer
right?
laziness and... You know, now we're
that
here.
I can relate to. Yeah. Shaving sucks.
It does.
Every
yeah.
time I have to shave, it's like, this is like 7 minutes that I would rather be doing something else.
For Ina's sake, at the start of the season, I didn't want us to start coming up with these nicknames predicated on the beard because I felt like then that would put pressure on you to have to keep the beard. And now look, we're
now,
in February.
No, Joey Buckets is beard, you know,
one that's still advocating for Joey Buckets, though. Everyone wants new names.
Yeah.
So in college, you got beard. Joey Buckets.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because people at Virginia started calling me Joey Hoops, but then it kind of shifted to Joey Buckets. I think that a lot of that was from my teammates too when we were there.
You were in the basketball wilderness for a period of time where you get drafted by Cleveland. It, obviously, being a second round pick on a team that's trying to win the championship with LeBron is tough sledding to earn playing time. I believe you had a broken bone in your foot, right?
Yeah.
So you have surgery for that. The Cavs trade you to the Magic. The Magic waive you immediately. You're now just a component in a trade. You're literally a component. The Cavs wanted to open a roster spot. How do we do that? This guy broke his foot. Blah blah blah. Done.
Yeah.
Then you go into the D League for a while. I don't know how long is the gap between when the Magic cut you and when you start playing again.
The Magic cut me the same day I was traded.
Yeah.
So technically,
were you ever a member of the Orlando Magic?
No, I never went to Orlando. Yeah, I wonder if it counts. Surgery, was traded, and cut all in the same day.
I mean, surgery in Cleveland?
No, it was actually in Indianapolis.
Indianapolis.
Yeah.
So surgery is done, you wake up. You are now a basketball free agent.
Yeah, pretty much.
What do you remember about, I mean, you're in Indianapolis. Did family come visit you?
My mom was there with me, and I had to spend the night in the hospital, so we were just kind of sitting there, in like the little, I guess, whatever recovery room. And, David Griffin called me and was like, I know this is terrible timing, but we just traded you to Orlando. And obviously I was appreciative of the opportunity to play in Cleveland. It was an unreal experience. So I had, you know, I was just thankful, and I was kind of in my mind thinking, all right, Orlando, try and get healthy and see what happens. But I still, at the same time, like, I know that, you know, my chances are very slim, just based off of like having the injury in January. I was going to be out for a couple of months at least. And then Orlando, or actually I didn't even talk to Orlando at all. My agent just basically said that Orlando was, waving me. And I actually was kind of filled with optimism, and I was still really just like surprisingly calm and confident. And I was just really focused on wanting to come back and be healthy. My mom was more upset, obviously, as moms are. You know, she was a little emotional. But I
like
still...
that. I want her to be, like, asking for the Magic general manager's number to, like, to yell.
This is Alice.
Yell. How dare you, sir?
But, you know, it's a good lesson. This is how the NBA works. And that was, like, an introductory to just, like, you know, I had really good personal relationships with everyone in Cleveland, people that I really respected a lot and enjoyed being around. But at the end of the day, it is a business. And that was, you know, that was my first introductory to just the NBA as a whole in that sense.
Did you ever tell your agent or in your mind get to a place where you're like, we should start reaching out to European teams?
Oh, yeah. Or,
yeah.
Yeah. I at the end of the day, my whole concern was just getting healthy, and I still looked at it like I still get a chance to play basketball for a living. So I was just excited about that, to be honest.
It's funny because that you were confident and calm and optimistic, because, you know, I look at Spencer, he even joked about it a couple of months ago before his extension, saying, well, you know, there are 27 teams that I would sign with, you know, Detroit and Chicago, or 28, whatever it is. Detroit and Chicago, probably not going to work out for me. Probably, he said it publicly, so he's probably not going to be on the list. And I don't think it's a secret that people in those organizations, and even Spencer has, you guys call him Google, he has an answer for everything. People in those organizations found him presumptuous in terms of overconfident. He got tagged with, and this you never want to hear, you hear this about young players, like, well, that's not a good sign. He got tagged with, oh, he thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. Well, that's what got him to where he is now. Like, the flip side of that is, without that, maybe he's not in the league, and now he's making $11 million a year. And I don't know if maybe he modulated it or something, or found a coach that could deal with it better. Or so, but it's the flip. You without that, I don't know where he is. It's interesting to think about that way.
Yeah, I mean, you think about just guys that play in the NBA, and it's like, you know, making it to the top of whatever field you're in, you have to have a certain level of ego or confidence to you in order to get to that point. And definitely, you know, you probably have to rein it in at some point. You can't be so overly one way or the other, you know. There's got to be a balance to it. But, you know, Spencer, obviously, he's got a lot of confidence just in everything that he does.
Not a secret.
No. But he, yeah, he definitely reined it in, I would say.
I think that's a credit to you guys, like the teammates around him. I think that's Kenny Atkinson, your coaching staff. Like, I think everyone has, in some capacity, figured out how the pieces all fit with personality too.
I think
that at times is what, you know, for a guy, you want the confidence of a Spencer, or even we see the confidence of D'Angelo, but you want to understand how to put that in a direction that's in the context of the team just about your own individual stuff.
Oh, yeah. And I think when, you know, you get to a point like now, everybody's so comfortable around one another, you kind of are like sort of like your best version of yourself, I guess. Like, you don't have to be so, like, you're not like feeling sort of insecure or like you have to prove something or act one way or another. Because I think a lot of times, especially when you're young in the NBA, you're with, you know, guys that you've seen play and you, you know, are essentially all like the best of the best, like the alphas, and you're like trying to figure out how I fit in. And sometimes you might, you know, have a tendency to just be a little brash or overzealous, whatever it might be, and it could come across the wrong way with some people.
I was going to just ask, like, fitting in with your game. So Jordan Ott is your personal coach.
Yep.
And I talked to him a bunch about you, you know, about everyone, but about you, and of course raves about you. But he was talking about when you first came to the Nets, he said most people assume, like, we would internally talk about it, but he said most people assume it was just your shooting. And he said your shooting may have been what got you on the court initially, but all the other little things is what kept you on the court. It is what gained the trust of the coaches. And so what was it like for you? Because we talk about you were first compared to Kyle Korver and a shooter, and now for all of us who watch you on a daily basis, we understand how much you've added to your game.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
Well, a lot of it is, you know, working with somebody like Jordan, where he is so just in tune with, like, my game personally. He understands the way that I play. You know, this isn't, like, discredit, like, the people that I worked with in Cleveland, but I did, you know, you do individual development stuff, and a lot of it is based around, you know, ball handling and this and that, and it's kind of, it looks good, like, when you're sitting back and watching it, but I'm not, you know, that's not really how I play, you know. And I got to Cleveland, or got to Brooklyn, and J.O., I started working with Jordan, and he's like, I think this is how you could be really good, and this is some things that we probably should to work on or make emphasis, but we want to make it as simple as possible too. We're not going to overly complicate it and tell you, you know, you're going to start handling the ball or doing this. He's like, this is not your game. He's like, you know, these are the clips that you should watch. So it started with, you know, watching Korver moving without the ball, how he was able to find space. Cause Kenny's bringing, you know, similar offense to what they did in Atlanta, and it's, you know, watching that, seeing where he was able to kind of find space, get shots from, and then it sort of kind of like progressed from there. It went from, okay, guys are going to start running you off the line. How are we going to make, you know, the simple play, simple, easy play after guys run you off the line? And that's being able to make the correct reads, you know, when to attack and be opportunistic when you drive, and then also when to make the correct pass. And so you come in and watch me do, you know, my individual development stuff now, and it is all based off of exactly what I do in the games. So I still work on the things where I know I'm going to get shots from, and I try and do them at the speed at which, you know, I'm going to see in a game. And then I do a lot of stuff where I'm reading and reacting, and it's, you know, different finishing stuff. I have to get creative with how I finish because I'm not, you know, going to be jumping over anyone.
But percentage-wise, you have been one of the best finishers in the league.
Yeah.
Like, most people think
about
it.
But a lot of it, too, is like,
shots.
You know, it is – I'm very opportunistic when I do drive. And, again, it's just trying to make the right reads. And, you know, when you sort of simplify the game how Jordan did for me, it makes it a lot easier. And I just play with a lot more confidence because I'm not, you know, overcomplicating it for myself or trying to be something that I'm not. And a lot of that just was based off of, like, my development stuff with him.
Do you still feel like other teams come at you when you're on defense because they just assume you're bad?
Yeah, and even last night, you know, teams tried to post me a lot. Like, I was guarding Rudy Gay a little bit last night, and, you know, I would do the same thing, though, too. I mean, you're trying to exploit mismatches, and we do it even, you know, when we're playing in games. There's guys that we know before the game when we go out there who we want to put in pick-and-roll situations or get, you know, switches on to. So I think, you know, for a while, you definitely have to earn your level of respect, especially as a defender in the NBA. And I think, you know, I've not that I have everyone's respect, but I think people know at least I'm going to play tough or competitive. I'm not going to just like let somebody try to post me and, you know, steamroll me over just because they might be bigger or this or that. Like, I like to think that I'm very competitive in the sense that, like, I'm going to make things tough.
Did you, Zach, did you ever see, when was it at Memphis? What was the, Happy Harris, we need to help us out with this, where you literally, you fell on the floor. Were you going up for a layup?
I got hit. Jaren Jackson came across the lane and kind of like knocked my balance off a little bit, and I just kind of flipped all the way over onto
my
back.
And then he literally bounced back off the floor.
I got to see the clip of this. I don't remember this.
I know, this is probably not good for audio.
It didn't hurt?
I mean, it hurt a little bit, but at the same time, like, I don't know. I'm not going to just like, my lay
favorite
on the ground.
That's my favorite play of your throughout your whole career. However many threes, it's my favorite play.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you ever have ambitions of, you're talking about building your game sort of piece by piece, right?
Yeah.
And, like, if you look at your numbers, I wrote this last week, like, your pick and roll numbers are, like, off the charts. It's, like, some of the best points per whatever in the league. But your pick and rolls are not what we think of as pick and rolls. Like, you run off the screen, catch, and drive. And that's kind of like, it's all in one motion, pick and roll. Do you have ambitions of taking the next step of the, like, that, like, that's part of Brooklyn's offense.
Yeah.
The next step is like, okay, when that's not working, like, I got the ball, let's reset it and I can run something. Like, do you have ambitions of doing that?
Not really, to be honest, and I think I can definitely improve in that area and at least try to, get better at handling it and like maybe pulling it out and getting into a pick and roll scenario. But the other guys on our team are so much better at it. And for the benefit of us, just as like the team, I have to stay within what I do best, and that's what's best for the Nets. And I maybe at some point, I don't know, I could see about adding that level to my game, but at the same time, there, Karis, Spencer, D'Lo, these guys are so good at doing that specifically. You know, so when things do break down, I shouldn't be the option to, you know, try and make something happen. You know, we have other guys in the team, but that's their role, you know.
How often are you recognized on the subway now? The 3-point contest, I feel like, is gonna flip that equation a little bit.
Yeah, people are definitely, you know, stopping me a little bit more often, but I mean, there's still, like, I walk to and from the Barclays pretty easily still.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How long of a walk?
5 minutes.
That's it?
Yeah.
Wow. That's good. Yeah. You will get recognized more. It'll happen.
Do you get recognized in restaurants? You know Joe's a foodie, right?
I've heard not only is he a foodie, I've heard that you bake.
I do a little bit, yeah.
Specifically bake.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Who'd you get that from?
I have my sources.
You bake. Oh, I didn't know you baked. Yeah. If Joe has been to a restaurant, I just know I want to go there.
So
I got some good spots.
I know. Yeah.
Baking is, there's cooking where it's like, I can cook a meal because if I miss a direction, or I once confused shallots and scallions and my wife made fun of me for putting the wrong thing around, the meal is still fine.
Yeah.
You could not screw up baking. Baking has to be like to the millimeter, or else your muffins like explode or don't run.
What do you bake?
I mean, I bake a lot of different things. I grew up, my mom is a really good baker, and so I just used to watch her do it all the time and, you know, bake everything from bread, cookies, muffins, whatever.
So just Sunday off day, you'll just be like, what am I, even when the girlfriend's gone, you'll just bake for fun?
Not so much when my girlfriend's gone. It's more of like, oh yeah, it's like Ayn and I are
cooking. Cause if left to my own devices, I will never cook anything ever.
Yeah.
I will just get takeout every night.
I mean,
I'm
more about convenience as well, but like, you know, if you're hanging out with your girlfriend, lazy Sunday afternoon, you know, you're probably going
to... You have a hat? Cookies. You have a baker's hat?
No.
This is a whole new development.
An apron? Do you have an apron?
No, I don't wear an apron.
We got to get Joey Buckets aprons. Get
do
on
Do you
that.
Have any low post
like imagine an apron with Joe Harris shooting silhouette on it, but instead of a ball, there's like a muffin coming out of his hand.
Oh, man.
Let's make that happen.
I like this.
This is great.
Another $1 million, another $5 idea that I've come up with. He baked cookie dough for the office. He brought in cookie dough, I was told.
I did bring in cookie dough.
Is making cookie dough baking?
I don't know. I do make cookie dough, but this actually was not cookie dough that I made. I had purchased.
Oh, so they think you made it.
Really?
Did you try to play it off?
No, no, no.
The
entire just a Christmas. It was for like the entire staff.
Dude, walk
does
in,
the Spurs performance team know that you're baking? Is that allowed? I feel like they banned.
Oh,
all
fresh
sweets.
Bread. They probably love it. Yeah, sweets.
I get a side eye.
Yeah, sweets are awesome.
So I just want to just paint the picture. You're an NBA player.
Yeah.
Your salary is public knowledge. It's large. Did you walked? I'm picturing you walking from your apartment in Park Slope with like aluminum foil to the next practice facility.
No, I had it all sent to the facility. Okay. It was a lot of, it was like 50 things of cookie dough, so.
Was it to bake the cookie dough or just eat the cookie dough?
No, so you have to bake. It's like slice and bake cookies, and it's from
so you're
this,
making
like,
me do the work.
Company.
Now all I can think about is cookie dough.
See,
it's pretty easy.
If you gave that to me, that's still in my house, unused. That baking
Aaron,
is hard.
Some. How were they? Pretty good. Yeah,
baking is hard work. I respect that.
Aaron's a tough critic.
He is a tough critic.
He's
that's
trashed.
Why I knew they were good.
He's trashed all of my baking.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, I didn't want anybody to think that either. I actually some of the. Because I had little like tags on the cookie dough where it like came from, but they kind of got lost in the shuffle. So there's some people that
Better
thought
off.
That I baked it. Yeah.
Better off.
What's your Subway charity policy? Do you have any musical acts that you just so you're a sucker for? You'll give them money every time. So if it's a controversial New Yorker subject.
It is.
Yeah, it's a kind of, like some people are like absolutist. You cannot give money. They say don't give money.
Yeah.
And some people are like, well, I like the mariachi band. I can't resist the when I see the mariachi band, I give them money.
Well, if I enjoy it, I give money.
Yeah.
Or
actually,
if I want them to
too.
Go down to the other end of the car, then I'll give money.
Okay.
There's a couple that I haven't given money for. There's one like where they leave the tissues like
I haven't seen that
on
one.
All the chairs, and it's like got like a note on it. It's the same. Like, it's just different women that are doing it.
Is
that,
it like,
talk about, like...
Oh, I haven't seen
I haven't
that.
Seen that one.
I've seen the cards, like, where they'll have little... The greeting cards.
The dancers who swing around and almost kick people in the face, I have a hard time with. I'm not a
fan.
They're really good. Sometimes I am a fan. Sometimes I'm like reading a magazine or something, and all of a sudden a foot is across my face. Like, I didn't ask for that.
You're not supposed to give them money, is that?
I think they even have an announcement that comes on the subway, like please do not give people money, which I think is mean. I think you should be able to give them money if you want.
I think so too. Yeah. Especially when someone
Do
is.
Do you want Joe to start going on with his baked goods? If anyone will give
See
him money.
See if I get any money.
Okay.
Listeners, hiring, I can imagine, is one of those things that can be challenging and time consuming. There are hundreds of job boards. Do you have to post your ad on every one? How do you know that you're not missing the one job board that has the right person? But there's one place where you can go that makes it simple, fast, and smart, and that place is ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost, the name of this podcast. ZipRecruiter sends your job automatically to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, and they don't even stop there. They have powerful matching technology that scans thousands of resumes and proactively finds people with the right experience, and then double proactively invites them to apply to your job. You've done nothing except use ZipRecruiter. Bam, they've found people for you. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers, that's a lot. If you shoot 80% from the foul line, that's pretty good. 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. You pretty much can't do any better than that. Right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free, zero, nothing, at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost. The name of this podcast, LOWEPOST, that's ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Do players talk about Sunday afternoon games? I believe you've had some Sunday afternoon games.
Yeah,
right?
We have.
Do you talk about the likelihood or possibility that the other team has hungover players on it?
not specifically, but we know playing in New York that, you know, there are probably the occasional times when guys are enjoying being in the city. I don't think that is, you know, totally ridiculous.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
DNP flu like symptoms.
Yeah.
Okay. That's.
Yeah.
You know?
But we don't actually, you know, discuss it, but.
It's not discussed.
I think in the back of the mind, it's probably thought across a lot of guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe after the game, depending on how
it plays out.
Yeah.
Okay. You are, I guess you are a foodie. Do you everywhere all across New York?
Yeah. If I hear of a good spot, that somebody has recommended, I'm like the first guy to go and check it out. We have a lot of guys on the team that like to go and eat at different restaurants too. So we're always kind of bouncing, different spots off of each other. Jared Dudley's more of a Manhattan guy. I'm probably more of a Brooklyn guy, but I like to eat my way around the city for sure.
It's one of the benefits of playing for the Nets, honestly, is like your facilities here.
Yeah,
it's not
incredible.
In Westchester, yeah. Like the Knicks.
You're a great resource on the road too.
I do have spots everywhere. Every NBA
really?
City.
Okay.
Yeah, because I like to get out and go and find, you know, a good spot to eat and compile sort of a list just in 5 years.
Can we have a Joe Harris book of like eating on the road with Joe Harris? You could have the apron and the hat.
Sure, why not?
With
just
it.
Go, I think
shooting, you could have like a whole little package.
I think you need to send your, so I honestly think NBA players could use these tips because I always like every day visiting teams come here. Now I understand I'm older than most NBA players. Okay. I maybe, when I do go out, I'm interested in doing different things than single 25 year old. Players, but they all go to the meatpacking district and go to the stupid clubs where you get the table and the $1,000 bottle of liquor. I'm like, you're in New York. You don't have to go there. You can go to this little wine bar in the village. You go to this cool dive bar. Why are you going to the stupidest place?
Some guys like the scene, though.
You're
you know?
Actually a journalist. You could write a book on this.
Like, it's not a good.
Right,
it wouldn't be a good book.
House.
It wouldn't be cranky. Zach gives like stop going to the meatpacking district.
If you're,
this is New York. I've always said I live in New York. Okay, so if there's a line, why am I? I once said
so
unless Paul Pierce is waiting in that bar and he's going to talk to me about basketball, like, why am I waiting in line? Is Kobe Bryant back there? There's a bar right over there that has alcohol.
True.
There's velvet ropes outside this bar. Why? What is it? Who would wait for this? You live in New York. You can find great places everywhere.
I know. It's so true.
I'm disappointed that the hungover team thing is not spoken about. Does Prigioni ever play? Pablo Prigioni?
Oh, yeah.
Is he still a pain in the ass when he wants to play defense?
Oh, my gosh. Even in some of the stuff that we do that's they're kind of supposed to be like half-ass defense a little bit. Pablo is trying to get steals, and he's letting everybody know how many steals that he has. And you're like, Pablo, relax, man.
Do you see this? Because it's not just Pablo. I feel like your whole coaching staff.
Our whole coaching staff. We have a lot of former players.
Yeah.
And they play all the time. Even today, I came in, and there was 3-on-3, and it was three players, Rondé, Jared, and I think it was Shabazz, were playing against three of the coaches.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do they trash talk a lot?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Will Adam Harrington just
They're always constantly chirping each other. Yeah.
That's great. I just wrote a big story about Chris Middleton, and he talks about when he wasn't playing in Detroit as a rookie, he and Kim English, who was also a rookie, and Kyle Singler, who was getting some playing time but not much, used to play, depending on how many people were available, after practice, before games, 1-on-1, 2-on-2, like Dee Brown was on the coaching staff, he would get in. And I talked to all of them, and they like cherished the memories of those games because for Chris and Kim English, that was their game. There was no, and for Dee Brown, who was like 42 or 43, it's like, I can still play. I want to show these kids I can still play.
Yeah.
And Greg Monroe told me like the games got so heated. I would stay after practice just to watch the games. And Greg actually said, I cut it from the story, and Greg actually said, it's kind of what makes the NBA special is like no one's watching, there's no media, and it's just like four guys going at each other.
Loving, you know, just competing against each other. And you see that was, 9:30 this morning, and I came in here, everybody's in crazy sweat, they've been playing games for probably like the last like 30 minutes or so, and they were just talking so much trash to each other, but that's like, you know, part of the one of the great things about the job, just like being able to have those competitive moments with coaches and people that you respect and, you know, guys that you like and want to be competing with.
Oh, this is the Joe. This is the Joe Harris story I was going to tell you. Speaking about restaurants and going to restaurants, I think the first time that we've gotten coffee a couple of times.
Yeah.
The first time we were supposed to get coffee, I texted you. It was right before the June 2017 draft. I was like, "Hey, man, I think Paul George might get traded today. Like, I can't be on the subway like going to meet you in Park Slope. I need to be." And that was my way of canceling.
Yeah.
And you were like, well, where do you live? Is there a coffee shop near your house? And I was like, dude, you're an NBA player. What are you like? I'm supposed to go over every obstacle to get to you. I'm like, well, yeah, there's a coffee shop right near my house in Long Island City, Queens. You want to come here? He's like, no, I can. I think the G train goes there. I was like, Joe Harris is a different kind of cat. And you came and we had coffee and Paul George didn't get traded.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of cat. Last question. Have you guys said the P word yet, playoffs? Have you said it? Have you uttered it behind closed doors? Is it something that you guys talk about?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it, yeah. And to be honest, the coaches don't talk about it a ton, but players, you know, we have expectations of making it to the playoffs, so we definitely talk about it. And but at the same time, the philosophy of, like, the team and the organization is so much just on – like taking it the one day at a time. I know it's like, you know,
it's such like a one cliche, possession at a time for some of these coaches.
But that's the way that we look at it too. We know that, you know, if we take care of business how we're supposed to, you know, and really just focusing on each game and the importance of each game at this point in junction of the season, the results will hopefully follow.
I think a Celtics Nets series in the first round would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, just getting into the playoffs would be a lot of fun. So we got to get that.
You got to get there first.
Yeah.
When you guys play the Celtics, do you care about the transactional history? Like, is it talked about?
No, I don't think. I mean, not at this point. No.
Okay.
I'd probably more so with the guys in the front office that have had to experience it, but
well, a lot of those guys are gone from one of the front offices. And
yeah,
it's still there in the other one. As a New Yorker, I would love. We actually have had home play. Like, it hasn't been that long since the Nets were out in the playoffs. I think 2015 against Atlanta. In the first. It's not like there's been that. It feels, because the hole was so deep, it feels like 15 years ago that Nets were in the playoffs. But it's not that long ago.
No.
You were in the finals that year.
Yeah, that was my rookie year.
What's your craziest memory of that playoff run? That's where everyone gets hurt. There are five people's already. Kevin gets hurt. Kyrie eventually gets hurt in the finals.
Yeah, Kyrie got hurt in the finals. Kevin got hurt against the Celtics with the
Olynyk.
Yeah. I mean, it was just crazy. But to see, that's like kind of when Delly emerged as Delly. And, you know, it was pretty awesome just because I'm so close with him. But then to see LeBron go on the run that he did. I mean, he averaged a triple-double for the finals. It was
ridiculous. You guys were up 2-1.
Yeah.
Playing that style where it was just like football.
It was it was so physical. And then defensively, too, you can go back and watch those games, and it was such a high level of defense in that finals. I mean, the Cavs, or us, I don't know why I said the Cavs, we were on another level. And then LeBron was just like kind of put the entire team on his back and was able to carry. He averaged like 37, 12, and 10 or something like that throughout the finals.
I voted him MVP.
Yeah.
And he didn't win, but I voted for him MVP.
What was your biggest takeaway playing with him? Is there anything you think about now or that you...
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. You know, I think the biggest takeaway for me was just seeing how diligent he was at taking care of his body. So I always tell people, obviously, he is one of the best players to ever play this game. But he's probably one of the best athletes in every sport in terms of taking care of his body. It's amazing just like how just maniacal he is. He does like what he does. Everything that he does is so he can perform at the highest level playing basketball.
So I always think of those finals where you guys were totally undermanned once Kyrie got hurt and the Warriors were a super team.
Yeah.
And you go up 2-1, and the game plan is just – you were like a football team that had a running game playing against the fun and gun Rams or something. It's just like, we're just going to post LeBron, and he's going to hold the ball for 15 seconds.
I know.
And we're going to slow the game. We're going to minimize possessions and slow the game. Like, did Blatt come up with that game plan? Did LeBron come up with that game plan? Did it just sort of organically happen? It was a fascinating strategy.
Yeah. I mean, it happened just based off of – you know, personnel and just given the circumstances with the offensive power that we lost with Kevin out and Kyrie out. I mean, I don't know what their stats were that year, but they obviously were accounting for a huge amount of the offense. And then you're relying so much on LeBron to do pretty much everything offensively. They really, really had to slow the game down. And a lot of that was just like probably LeBron, a lot of it. But then David was, you know, a really good coach in his own right. T. Lou was there. Mm-hmm. It was just a lot of really smart people that were like, this is our best opportunity to win. And
you only got
to
win really four.
Yeah.
You only got to win four. You don't have to win. Like, it's not the regular season. You just got to find a way to win four.
And to be honest, too, it seemed like that last game, I mean, when we lost in Cleveland, everybody was just like so worn down. We only played like seven guys throughout that series. So people just like, I mean, Deli was literally going to like the hospital after like
seven. I don't know why
games.
We're laughing. He's literally in the hospital.
Yeah. And I mean, guys literally exerted so much in that series. But it was because we were just so undermanned, and like the effort that everybody was giving on both ends, I mean, it could only last for so long, and it just wore on everyone.
Yeah, once the Warriors figured it out, it was
and
pretty
Iguodala
clear
they figured it out. Played extremely well. Yeah. He was kind of the guy where they were like, if someone's going to beat us, it's going to be Iguodala, and then he ends up, you know, obviously he won finals MVP, and you know, they rightfully won the championship.
That was the series against, speaking of Deli, that was when Deli, like, took out half the Hawks, right, in the conference finals. They took out Horford, took out Korver, just took out everybody. That was my favorite subplot of the season, was that Bud got hired to coach Deli's team. He was like, yeah, it's not going to work out for Deli. He's not going to last there.
Yeah, public enemy number one with the Atlanta Hawks regime that was down there.
When Al Horford gets mad at you, you've done, you've earned your... Yeah, when he was mad, he went. I believe he got a technical. He may have gotten thrown out of a game in that series for going to Deli.
The Hawks had such a great season, and we came in and we swept them in the conference finals.
Well, that was, I believe, you guys set a record for most threes in a playoff game in that series. I mean, it was like, you made 25 threes or something in a game. It was just like,
it was absurd,
everyone was just going bananas.
Yeah.
It was fun. Well, what a wild career. And it's really, you're, what are you, 27?
Yeah.
It's like not half over. Hopefully,
just getting started. And now we know the post-career, the baking career.
Yeah. All right. Well, Joe, congratulations on 3-point shootout. I mean that sincerely. That said, my wife and I toasted to Joe Harris. She was like, who? And I was like, no, just trust me. We're toasting to Joe Harris. She only knows like six NBA players. It's been awesome watching you play, and like, you're kicking ass. The team is really fun to watch. And Sarah Kustak, we're going
to
do this
again.
I'm
on my way to go get the trophy now. I know it's still in Charlotte. Joe, we need that back in your hands.
We may not in New York be spoiled, although it's changing. It's changing with great NBA teams. We have a good one now and another one that's maybe not good. We have great, great TV experiences. The Knicks and the Nets might be the two best local broadcast teams in the
Easily.
League. Look at the talent
that is, you know,
Thanks,
that we
Joe.
Have.
We enjoy
you guys
it.
Are all over. When you're not
we
calling Nets
it.
Games, you're literally all
Joe,
prime time.
I've only had to pop the low post on our Yes broadcast like 10 times in the New York Post, in all these different places, to finally get Zach to let me on the podcast.
And we had to introduce
he was
you.
Like, he was like, I'll check with Joe and see if Joe minds.
We had to introduce you in baby steps because your level of happiness is just foreign to me. I don't understand it.
I have kept it down.
I know.
I
it's
like
been,
or,
it,
been
it's just,
very
I just, I feel like I need an intermediary.
Level.
It just, it, it's, I, it, we,
this is a good
we'll
balance.
Try it again. Maybe I'll get in a more mentally
Next
healthy
time
place.
I see you,
we'll try
I
it again. All right. Well, good luck the rest of the way.
Appreciate
and hopefully
that.
We get some home playoff games.
Yeah. Thank you.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.